Okay, thanks for joining us today on a Directions Media podcast. We're here today specifically talking about location-based services, and we have on the line Darren Koenig, who's the wireless market director for Teleavis. Darren, thanks very much for joining us today.
Hey, it's my pleasure to be here.
Yeah, we're going to start with a couple of questions regarding the personal navigation market, and some of the things that we've been seeing in the market is kind of the uptake in the real-time traffic information. There's a lot of information being integrated now with the personal nav devices. Maybe if you could just give us a background about what you see about the relative uptake of the real-time traffic subscriptions coupled with the PNAV devices, and well, we'll start there.
Absolutely. Well, I think that one of the key triggers for uptake is obviously having the devices that are capable of using the information. The information about traffic generally, of course, has been available for a long time, and there are actually increasing amounts of other great dynamic content that are becoming available that I'd like to talk a little bit about. The idea that increasing numbers of PNAV devices are coming with Bluetooth connectivity, and almost every phone you buy these days, every medium or high-end phone, has got Bluetooth on it, lets users establish a pipe out into the internet or into the connected world, and suddenly you're able to make your experience much better by tying in real-time dynamic information, to the mapping experience that you had. The other piece I think that is really in the process of revolutionizing the world is the number of devices that are out there in terms of mobile handsets that are capable of doing GPS navigation, and the idea that those devices are inherently connected and, of course, can access that dynamic content. So traffic is the first one, and it's super valuable to you as a driver if you can dynamically find out that there's construction or accident ahead of you and route around it. But increasingly, you'll find other really interesting bits of content tying in, whether it's a movie listing or a menu at a restaurant or upcoming weather or one of our favorites, particularly if you're in congested cities like Boston or New York or San Francisco, the idea of having real-time parking availability. So not only will you know where a parking garage is, but you'll actually know how many spots are open.
Yeah, I noticed that's been talked about a lot. How close are we, you think, to getting a lot of that real-time information as a subscription? In those cities, can you actually subscribe to a service to get the location and number of parking spaces available?
Yeah, there are actually a few really interesting entrepreneurial companies that are out there that have started those exact types of offerings. I know that there are early availability of offerings in Boston and Chicago for sure, and I think San Francisco is either on or about to come on for some of those companies.
And you mentioned weather too. That's always been a fascinating topic with me because, in particular, for the driving experience, you really don't want to go driving into a blinding weather storm, or at least have the availability of that type of information. So I'm wondering, is that something that's 6 months away, a year away? How long do we have as a time horizon for getting that information integrated?
For a lot of this stuff, it's actually a matter of, it really is more a matter of integrating the information than having the information be available. So there actually are companies that are out there that do aggregate and provide, if not up to the second, certainly up to the quarter hour, up to the half hour, current weather information. And so that information's out there. It's a matter of increasingly savvy users in a rapidly growing install base of people to get the critical mass of enough people asking for a service. So, yeah, those things are real, and we're going to see a lot more of it. One of the, depending on who you ask, of course, the numbers of users for the technology clearly is going through the roof. I mean, I think we're definitely at the bend in the hockey stick sort of shape on the graph. But the idea that we're going to move from low to tens of millions of users today into hundreds of millions of users of these types of services just over the course of the next 4 or 5 years, I think is going to really open up the market and increasingly open up specialized functions and really make greater degrees of personalization possible.
Yeah, that's one of the things that I know that I wanted to hit on was the area of personalization. How do you see that taking shape? Is this going to be something that an individual who, they only live in a particular city like San Francisco that says, well, I really only want to get customized information and I only want to pay for that information. So how do you see that personalization working in the PNAV market?
There are a couple different ways to answer that. So at the most basic level, you can kind of do, if we think of an iPod as that, you know, the sort of device we all think of as being able to personalize, you know, I can pick what color it comes in, and I can pick what kind of music I like and what's on there. And those are two different types of things. So how I experience or how I look at it, and then also the types of stuff that it does, the content piece. And the great thing is that, you know, the navigation market generally is evolving along both of those directions. So you've got the ability to choose which types of things you do in terms of, as an example, tying in your choosing to participate in social networking, as an example, to share your location with other people or to share observations that you have with other people. So that, you know, TomTom's new product is a great example of that. Or social networking is a great example where, for example, users of a great product called Looped, which is has been available through Boost for Boost Mobile for about a year and has just launched on Sprint, I know, lets you opt into a group where the people in your group share their locations, and you can set alerts to let you know when you're close to one of your friends, for example. It also lets you to make notes and tie them to locations, not just to particular events.
Yeah, the whole idea of social networking really is kind of fascinating, and maybe it's a generational thing where the younger generation more used to using personal devices will begin to do that. Certainly, there are interesting business applications in terms of location-based networking that I could see. You know, whether it's a sales executive who wants to know where his sales associates are. So, you know, are you positioning some of TeleAtlas's offerings to attract both the business and the consumer user?
Oh, absolutely. So we certainly serve. You know, we have a great market share in, for example, fleet management. I think we do something like 74 or 75% of fleet management applications, and users use TeleAtlas data to figure out, you know, where a fleet of trucks is, for example, or delivery vans or those types of things. On the personal side, we work with a lot of companies to as this market is growing so rapidly. And the age demographic question you raised is a really interesting one. You know, there's Pew Group, I think, did a study that showed that 48% of the teens and tweens were on a social networking site every day. Every day, 48% of them, which is just a staggering number. And these are the people who are kind of the connected generation who weren't really alive before mobile phones were out there and being used. And so, you know, these guys have that group of people has the expectation of always being able to access their information wherever they are. And so that's going to give rise to obviously increasing numbers of users on the younger side. But there was the Yankee Group did a study last year and found that among adults 35 and older, all the way up, 35 and up, the top thing they wanted to use a mobile device, the top extra thing they wanted to have on a mobile device was actually related to maps and information. So both ends of the generational spectrum are really interested in using these types of services, although they're coming in with totally different sets of expectations.
Right. Yeah, no, I think you're absolutely right. You know, one of the things that we noticed when the iPhone came out was that there was not a GPS chip in the phone. What I'm looking for is there some catalyst that needs to happen for the acceptance of a personal nav device to take off? I mean, I always assume that you need GPS in order to make these things work effectively. I was disappointed not to see that chip in the iPhone, and probably will be there. But do you see that or any other type of catalyst that needs to occur before this market really takes off?
Well, I think that there are two or three major hurdles we've got to get over for that to happen. And candidly, I think we're at that point, at that tipping point. You know, one of them, of course, is the technology itself. You know, there has to be some availability of technology that's able to, you know, to provide GPS type capabilities and do it at a reasonable price. The cost of autonomous GPS has come way, way down over the course of the last couple of years because of all the extra people purchasing it. On the mobile side of it, the piece that's really driven it was, here in the United States a few years ago, the E911 mandate went into effect. And network operators had a choice of two ways to meet the requirement. One was you could make the network, give the network the capability to locate the handset, and the other one was you could give the capability, the handset the capability to locate itself. And today, the IDIN network that Nextel used to operate and Sprint operates now, and the CDMA network that's operated by Sprint and by Verizon, those two networks, and many of the other smaller companies who use CDMA, those guys built the capability into their networks, or rather Qualcomm built the capability into the chipsets and into the networks. And so today, about 60% of the handsets that are shipped in the United States actually have GPS capabilities on them. Don't rely on the network to do it. So the first, you know, the one really critical thing you've got to have, which is availability of GPS, that piece is actually there. The critical mass part is really finally getting there in terms of phones having the capabilities to take advantage of GPS. And that, in turn, spurs people to want to develop applications to run on it. And that's the first piece. The second piece is you've got to have, you know, usable applications. And so this is one where we really benefit from the experience and the developers' years of effort on the enterprise side, where people who did fleet tracking or automated dispatch of a plumber or even some Salesforce automation stuff or navigation of a, you know, for example, a sales guy to a meeting, there was a lot of work that was done, paid for by return on investment, but done on the enterprise side, the B2B side, and the learnings from that about how the client-server model should work, how thick a client you could run on a phone, about how the user interface should work, about what the website should look like versus the phone side. A lot of that work has been done, and we've been able, and people have been able to take the learnings from the enterprise side and apply it to a more mass-market consumer type of solution. And then the final piece is people've got to know about it. And so for a long time, capabilities were out there, and people didn't really know that they existed. And now, for the first time, just over the course of the last 12 to 18 months, you've seen big pushes from, you know, the operators like Sprint and Verizon and Singular, who, you know, made big public announcements and pushes of GPS products. And then you've got consumers becoming increasingly aware that these capabilities are out there because of the success of companies like TomTom on the PNAV side, or the inclusion of GPS capabilities into increasing numbers of automobiles. So the technology is finally there, the user interface is developed, the install base is there, and now potential customers are aware of it. And all those things together, you know, make it a really great time to be involved with the space and to get to watch how it's, you know, how it's exploding.
Yeah, I know. I can certainly see that. So we're not overhyping this at all. The fact is that this is real. There's real applications. The handsets are now enabled, and there's certainly ready availability of the network out there that can handle the traffic and the efficiencies. So do you have any perspective on really, you know, in terms of either dollars or numbers that we may be seeing in terms of sales of the PNAV market, and whether you think that there's more, whether there's going to be maybe some cannibalization of personal nav devices over in-vehicle? Like, I may want a personal nav device, and I'll use that as a disconnected device from having an in-dash system. So I wonder if you have any perspective on that.
Absolutely. And so there are a number of different, everybody's got a different number for this, but, you know, if we pick one, ABI's prediction is that over the next 5 years, we're going to see something like 315 million new LBS users, new personal navigation users. So that's a really big number when we're starting at a number that's, you know, in the tens of billions today, to say that it's going to get 300 million new folks over 5 years. So what that means is there's a lot of room for growth in all these markets, and we're not talking about we're never talking about cannibalization in terms of taking business from one and giving it to another. We're talking about sort of the percentages of that growth that each different segment will have. And so I think, you know, for one thing, I think that the upside, just because the market is growing so quickly, I think that the upside for all the segments is definitely still there. We actually did some primary survey research ourselves to figure out what customer, because we obviously that question you just asked is one that's near and dear to us, and so we asked people about what they felt there. And one of the questions we asked was, you know, if you were offered the option to have a separate personal navigation device, a separate phone, a separate MP3 player, and a separate digital camera, for example, would you prefer to have them all on one device, or would you prefer that they be integrated? And the answer that came back was about 50-50, a little more than 50, about a little fewer in Europe and a few more in the U.S. Worked out that people basically broke down the middle, and about half of them were multiple gadget guys, and half of them were converged device guys. And so that by itself points to, you know, the opportunity for longevity in the spaces for the users. One of the other questions we asked was among people who already had personal navigation devices like TomToms sitting in their dashboards, or an automotive one in their car, would you also be interested in having this on your phone? And the answer was overwhelmingly yes, which makes sense. If you get used to a certain set of conveniences, if you're able to push up a couple buttons to figure out where's the closest CVS where's the closest Bank of America ATM when you're sitting in your car, you don't always have all those gadgets with you. But it'd be really nice, even if you didn't want to use it as your preferred device, it'd be really nice to have access to that sort of convenience in your pocket, because you know that's the advantage. The cell phone goes with you everywhere, and so the idea of taking that with you is really a compelling one.
Yeah, I didn't think of it that way. Although I have to say that the form factors vary so much that I could see a reason for keeping them separate. I like the fact that I can get a little bit wider screen on an in-vehicle device, a disconnected device, versus a dash. And I'm sure the in-dash systems can even be larger. I don't know what they are, whether they're 5+ inches or not. I know some of the regular PND devices are, you know, anywhere from 3.5 to 4.5. But I would certainly think that if I'm, you know, navigating in a vehicle, I like that wider screen versus something that's in my, you know, that's on my phone. So,
you know, you absolutely do, and it's one of those things. I was actually thinking about this our call this morning. I had a quick visit to the doctor's office, and I was sitting there. I was thinking, you know, if I had it, this is the opportunity. This is the kind of time that I might flip on watching video on my phone. I might, you know, that when you're sitting there with, you know, limited other forms of entertainment, it's a great thing to have access to. But when I get home, there's no chance I'm going to do that instead of turning on my plasma.
Right.
And it, you know, it's exactly the same, I think, for people who are, for people who are driving around.
Well, great, Darren. Thanks again. I really appreciate your perspectives on this. I think it was a great conversation, and we'll be following this market quite significantly in the future.
Well, thanks very much for making the time today, Joe, and look forward to chatting with you more about the topic some other time.